shot. So, continuing with the, I say the Kali Yuga weather forecast. Yeah. Okay. Marriage will be formed as a matter of formal agreement between man and woman. In most cases, the children will not be taken care of properly. The Brahmanas are traditionally intelligent men, and thus they will be able to pick up modern education to the topmost rank. But as far as moral and religious principles are concerned, they shall be the most fallen. Right? Because as soon as you just apply only intelligence without the character aspect, without the guide of authority, then they'll become the worst, because now they can mentally speculate in areas outside of the Vedic context. Right? If I have a structure of moral conduct, then I use my intelligence within that, how to practically apply it, how to, you know, what are the varieties, what are the individual considerations, then you get some very good quality. But if it's a matter of, you know, the sky's the limit, you can think whatever you like, do whatever you like, and then especially is that your uniqueness is not based on the Veda and application of it, but your uniqueness is that you're different from everybody else, therefore the theory you come up with has to be different. That means it's not based on authority, it's not based on accepting authority, and it doesn't necessarily have to consider anybody else. So whatever's going on, you think of something opposite of that, now you become special. Right? And then when everybody starts talking like that, then it'll come along that they'll talk opposite of that. And so it'll just keep going back and forth. So that's the thing, is that without, what Bhavi says, moral and religious principles, then they will be the worst. They'll be the most fallen. And because of that, they'll create all the different troubles that are there. Education and bad character go ill together, right? Because if you have a person that behaves badly, he doesn't know anything, he can't do too much. But if he has bad character and is smart and is working in the intellect, then he can make so much trouble. Right? But such things will run parallel, right, in the modern concept. The administrative heads, as a class, will condemn the tenets of Vedic wisdom and will prefer to conduct a so-called secular state. Right? Because, see, in the Vedic tenets, then there's authority. And then the difficulty comes up is that the administrative class, they just want to be the authority only. They don't want to have to listen to the Brahmins. So that way, then they'll get rid of that. Right? So they'll stay away from it, because then they'll have their authority. Just like the Brahmins get rid of the Vedic, so they can mentally speculate. The Kshatriyas will get rid of it, so they don't have to listen to the Brahmins. And they can just be practical. Right, so the secular state means then they're the authority. Otherwise, then they're controlled by, you know, that annoyed Henry VIII so much is that he's the head of state, but then the Pope, who lives so far away, and he's Italian, right, he can tell him what to do. Right, so he didn't like that. And the so-called educated Brahmins will be purchased by such unscrupulous administrators. Right, so then they just work for them. Does that make sense? They just use their intelligence to come up with things that the administrators can use, rather than it's what's for the public benefit. Even a philosopher and writer of many books on religious principles may also accept an exalted post in the government, which denies all the moral codes of the Shastras. Right? So you see that is that someone who's probably as mentioned here is that someone's a philosopher, has written many books and all these things on religious principles, but then when they get involved in the government, it's not based on any of those codes of the Shastras. They just function in their own way. The Brahmanas are specifically restricted from accepting such service. But in this age, they will not only accept service, but will do so even if it is of the meanest quality. Meanest here means of, you know, very small. These are some of the symptoms of the Kali age, which are harmful to the general welfare of the human society. Right? So, as we saw before, it's all about the universe is designed for going back to Godhead. So that means then you have to perform sacrifice. Then perform sacrifice, then you have to be following the tenets of the Vedas. And so then, but we see in the Kali Yuga, then the Veda is put aside, so therefore sacrifice is put aside. Therefore, then everybody's going the opposite direction of going back to Godhead. That's just how it works. So that's why these things are weak, because they're not supportive of devotional service. Does that make sense? So we have to be very careful that we don't you know, jump on the bandwagon of any of this and then claim that this is, you know, what's important. Does that make sense? Because otherwise you have someone, let's say, you have somebody who's devotional or a preacher and that, and they deal in the field a lot. And so then they know the scriptures very nicely and everything like that. But then, as we mentioned, then you have some that they've gone to the modern educational institutions. They have their degrees like that, as Krishnakshetra Maharaj pointed out. The degree is, its nomenclature is piled high and deep. It means you have a lot of cow dung, and you pile it up very high and very deep, and that then signifies that they have a degree in the modern academic field, right? Does that make sense? It means PhD, piled high and deep. You said that's actually what it means. Right? He has one, so he should. We'll take his authority on that. So then the difficulty is that it's because of having the PhD that they consider they're the authority on making decisions on what Prabhupada's saying in the books, rather than those who, you know, necessarily just practice it. Not that we're saying that the academic person is not practicing, but he's considering his position as an academic is more authoritative than someone who doesn't have that. This is what we mean. Is that it's not based on religion and morality. It's just based on false ego. You understand? So that's the difficulty in the age. So that's why then we have to be careful with this. We have to, because these are the symptoms of the age and how it works. So it's not that we're devotees, it won't affect us. If we're acting on the devotional platform, it won't affect us. But if we at all, you know, consider that, well, maybe, you know, some parts are okay, then, you know, Kali, it's his age, he knows what to do. But we have to remember is his age is one of four ages that belong to Krishna. So if you are surrendered to Krishna, then Kali has no effect. But if you're not, then it's Kali's time. He's the man. Okay, text 22. The so-called administrators are now bewildered by the influence of this age of Kali, unless they have put all state affairs into disorder. Are you now lamenting this disorder? Right. So in other words, he's going through the options of what may be the problems that why Bhumi is lamenting. So he's going through all these different things, because she's the earth, she takes care of all the living entities, but if the administrators don't take care of the people, even though she's providing things, then it's not coming out nicely. So he's asking, are you lamenting due to this? Now the general populace does not follow the rules and regulations for eating, sleeping, drinking, mating, etc. And they are inclined to perform such anywhere and everywhere. Are you unhappy because of this? Because right? She being Bhumi, she has to see all this. You know, it's just like when it mentions the when you perform, how is the karma documented? Right, you've done something. How is it known that that's what you've done? So Bhumi is one of the witnesses. So Bhumi is the witness. Air is the witness. Sun, moon, is the witness. You know, so you're not getting away from any of them. Right? Something sort of, yeah. So then, you know, she has to put up with all this. So he's asking, are you disturbed because of that? Purport. There are some necessities of life on par with those of the lower animals, and they are eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. These bodily demands are for both the human beings and the animals, but the human being has to fulfill such desires not like the animals. Right? The same desires, but they don't fulfill them like the animals. But they should fulfill them like a human being. Right? Does that make sense? So everything, just like these four are there, so dogs will accomplish that in the dog way, cats in a cat way. You know, the birds in the bird way. So humans have to do these, follow these four in a human way. Like that. A dog can mate with a bitch before the public eyes without hesitation. But if a human being does so, the act will be considered a public nuisance. And the person will be criminally prosecuted. Right? Because there's just a method. There's just, humans have their method of taking care of these four. And so that's so many of the things we see. It's restricted. It doesn't have the same elephant. The element. that the dogs, they just, you know, whatever they feel like, when, you know, they work on that, you know, feelings, right? So then that's, you know, when we're talking about, oh, but they feel like, that's dog society. That's animal society. Therefore, for the human being, there are some rules and regulations, even for fulfilling common demands. Right? So everything's, these four, they're always regulated. Otherwise, if not, then one will be no different than the animal. So you're trying to uplift yourself from the animal position up to, you know, human and beyond to transcendental. Human society, the human society avoids such rules and regulations when it is bewildered by the influence of the age of Kali. In this age, people are indulging in such necessities of life without following the rules and regulations. Right, so Prabhupada says they're necessities, but still you have to follow the rules. You're saying, oh no, but you know, we're free. No, you still have to follow these necessities. Because if you're free means like Prahlad Maharaj. He's just sitting there in his yogasana. He's not eating, right? He stops breathing, like that. That's free. But if you're eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, that's not free. And then the claim that regulation means, oh, then just say, oh, I want to be an animal. Like that. Human means there's restriction. Right? Does that make sense? You know, if you go out in the backyard and your Pomeranian, you know, takes a little bit of a run and then takes off and starts flying around, then you'll think something's weird here. No? Yeah, so the whole point is that the dog acts like a dog, so the human has to act like a human. And the human acting like a human, that's not restriction. That just makes them human. Does that make sense? And this deterioration of social and moral rules is certainly lamentable because of the harmful effects of such beastly behavior. Because it'll all, someone's not behaving properly, it'll have an effect on others. It's not that it just affects you, it affects all others. In this age, the fathers and the guardians are not happy with the behavior of their wards. They should know that so many innocent children are victims of bad association awarded by the influence of this age of Kali. We know from Srimad Bhagavatam that Ajamil, an innocent son of a brahmana, was walking down a road and saw a Shudra pair sexually embracing. This attracted the boy, and later on the boy became a victim of all debaucheries. So that's the whole point, is that why is he seeing? They should be in some place where you don't see. Right? So because of that, it has an effect. So that make sense? From a pure Brahmin, he fell down to the position of a wretched urchin, and it was all due to bad association. There was but one victim, like Ajamil in those days. But in this age of Kali, the poor innocent students are daily victims of cinema, which attract men only for sex indulgence. So it's like before, it says, before there was only one person like Ajamil in that age. But it sets example for every time. But at the same time, he says, now, he says, all the students, they're all how do you say, subject to this. Yes? Because others see. Like here, as we're talking, like they, I guess someone was telling me, you know, a few years ago about how when they were going to college, you know, the high school is one thing, but when they switch to college, you know, one of the main things is when you're walking down, because the college, you try to set it up nicely with places to sit and that, because it's a nice environment. And so in that nice environment, then you're going to get out your books, you're going to study, you're going to write, you know, you're going to do all that nice educational stuff, right, with all those benches and little arches and, you know, nooks and crannies and niches and all those kind of things that they set up in a university, right, especially the old ones. But this person was saying when they go down in any one of those little places on the bench and this out of the way, there's somebody there. They're kissing and that kind of jazz, right? And so then it's a problem. So just like Ajamil, he became distracted. Why this won't be distracted? Someone's come there to study, and then they find out, well, actually, you just have to party. Otherwise, everyone thinks you're a nerd, right? Unless you're going to MIT, and then it's okay. Right? And then you're supposed to be a nerd, right? You know, if you're not. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the point. It just distracts. So any of these things, you know, people are eating non-vegetarian stuff, then they, you know, people see, then they wonder, what is this? What's going on? You know, so any of these, So it's just all these. You know, they're sleeping in the morning when they should be up. You know what I'm saying? So it just affects the human society, because human society has that regulation. Does that make sense? You know, you sleep at night, then, you know, sex is at night, it's private. You know, you sleep in private like that. You know, you get up in the Brahma Muhurta, you perform your regulation like that. You have your, you know, morning, then you have your day, the work, then the evening. You have again with the family and sadhana, things like that. You know, what you eat is offered to the Lord, so it has to be something that's offerable. You know, the standards of cleanliness, all these things are there. But if people see stuff that's not, it seems more practical than what you're doing. Because to be human, it's like, to be human, then, you know, you need to go to the bathroom. You have to find the bathroom. The dog doesn't. It's just wherever it is, it just, you know, goes for it. So that's the thing. So it looks more practical. So in other words, animal life seems more practical than human life. Does that make sense? Yeah, like that. The so-called administrators are all untrained in the affairs of a kshatriya. The kshatriyas are meant for administration, as the brahmanas are meant for knowledge and guidance. The word kshatrabandhu refers to the so-called administrators, or persons promoted to the post of the administrator without proper training by culture and tradition. Nowadays, they are promoted to such exalted posts by the votes of the people, who are themselves fallen in the rules and regulations of life. How can such people select a proper man when they are themselves fallen in the standard of life? Therefore, you know, so your common person is not trained. Therefore, then, for leadership, they'll choose someone who's not trained. So then it just, you know, doesn't work out nicely. Therefore, by the age of the influence of the of Kali, everywhere, politically, socially, or religiously, everything is topsy-turvy. And therefore, for the sane man, it is all regrettable. Does that make sense? So, on all the levels, because of this, then we see as everybody's living and acting, you know, like a Shudra. So then that's the problem, is that it's not about the rules. Does that make sense? And so then the leadership, what he's mentioning is all the leadership that should be leading in these areas of political, social, and religiousness, they're not. They're as bad or worse. And then, you know, yes. Well, you could look at it from a few angles. You could start off as the smell might be an indication. Right? That might give you a first hint. Secondly is, I forget what it was. I remember one gentleman discussing it in South India. He went there and he was quoting from one Shastra that the first onion and garlic were found growing from the side of a dead cow. Right? So that's where they started. So then they're considered non-veg. That's just why they're not. And so that's from that angle. You know, one, they smell bad. Two is they have that angle that they're not considered. It's like the red lentils. They're also considered not in the vegetarian kind of thing. It means that by eating them, it's not that you've eaten meat, it's just that it's not in the mode of goodness. So they're, you know, passion, ignorance, so it's like there. They're used, you see a lot, the onions and garlic be used for medicine for the animals. In the Ayurveda, in the section on the cows and animals and all that, it's used a lot for them, gets rid of worms, like that. So there's many medicines that are made for cows and that with onions. But for humans, it's generally not used. Does that make sense? And I saw, when I was in Sydney, in a Chinese restaurant, they had put a poster up. And going through the five types of onions, it means you have your onion, you have garlic, you have leeks, you have spring onions, and you have, I think, shallots or something like that. They're all just the same thing, just different sizes. You know, the onion is the biggest. Then you have these other ones that are smaller and more greens. but there's big ones like that, then medium ones, then the small ones, and then you have garlic. And so according to the Chinese medicine, it was showing how each one of them destroys some aspect of your, like your intelligence or, you know, your all these different things like that. And so, you know, needless to say, as they, you know, following the tradition, they didn't use them. Right? So there's just, so from many angles you see it's not, because they're, you know, they'll bring out passionate ignorance and everything like that. They're not, they're not recommended. Like that, you know. If you like the flavor, go for Hing, you know, that's quite standard. Or you can also try neem leaves. Like that. They also in the background have that kind of flavor. But it's bitter, it's good for health. But less stinky. Is that okay? Yeah, so it's not something that we are comfortable with. Okay. Okay, text 23. O Mother Earth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, incarnated himself as Lord Sri Krishna just to unload your heavy burden. All his activities here are transcendental, and they cement the path of liberation. You are now bereft of his presence. You are probably now thinking of those activities and feeling sorry in their absence. Right? So now he's Dharma himself. He's gone through all the different elements of Dharma, right? He starts at the farthest out and then comes up more subtle, and then he brings it to this point of that you know, Krishna's come and he came to relieve the burden of the earth, and now he's gone. So then that must be the reason. Right? So there are always, that's why this story will be in Bhagavatam, because it takes it all the way up to Krishna. That's the point, is that all the stories in Bhagavatam, they always bring in the Krishna conscious element. The same stories you might find in other Puranas, but they'll only bring up to the mode of goodness platform or passion or ignorance like that. They won't bring it all the way to pure goodness. So that's the specialness of Bhagavatam. Purport. The activities of the Lord include liberation, but they are more relishable than the pleasure derived from nirvana or liberation. According to Srila Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the word used here is nirvana vilambitani, that which minimizes the value of liberation. To attain nirvana, liberation, one has to undergo a severe type of tapasya, austerity. But the Lord is so merciful that he incarnates to diminish the burden of the earth. Simply by remembering such activities, one can defy the pleasure derived from nirvana and reach the transcendental abode of the Lord, to associate with him, eternally engaged in blissful loving service. Right? So we've heard about just the sinful activities, we've heard about the pious activities, you know, all the relationships that are there, the different considerations. Then we're bringing it to liberation, and then to the Lord's pastimes. So we see here is, even though Dharma is discussing Dharma, he'll bring it all the way up to this point. Right? So that's an essential. So because liberation, so we've heard about how sinful is not good. We've also discussed how the pious is not our focus. We engage it, right? We're not going to use the sinful, we're going to use the pious. So then the difficulty comes up is that there's also the thing of that, the difficulty, the distraction due to the pleasure and pain of this world we want to get rid of, so that's nirvana. So that happiness also has to be left behind. One can defy the pleasure derived from nirvana and reach the transcendental abode of the Lord to associate with him, eternally engaged in his blissful loving service. So that point is that it's bliss. Right? Material world you have happiness and distress. Spiritual world you have bliss. Right? Does that make sense? So one's going beyond. One has to not be looking for the pleasure of not being disturbed. One has to look for the aspect of being absorbed in Krishna's service. So, okay, 24. Mother, you are the reservoir of all riches. Please inform me of the root cause of your tribulations by which you have been reduced to such a weak state. I think that the powerful influence of time, which conquers the most powerful, might have forcibly taken away all your fortune, which was adored even by the demigods. Purport. By the grace of the Lord, each and every planet is created fully equipped. So not only is this earth fully equipped with all the riches for the maintenance of its inhabitants, but also when the Lord descends on the earth, the whole earth becomes so enriched that all kinds of opulences, with all kinds of opulences, that even the denizens of heaven worship it with all affection. Right? Because demigods, they appreciate the heavenly planets because of the facilities. Does that make sense? So in other words, you have devotees that are, you know, quite nicely distracted by material facilities. And so if you think of Krishna, then you go to Krishna. But if you don't, then don't go to the heavenly planets, right? And so then naturally, then you'll like facilities, nice facilities. But we see here is that when Krishna is here, then the facilities that are here are so great and so special, even those on the heavenly planets who appreciate good facilities can see that it's even better. So they'll respect the earth for that. But it's all understood. It's coming from the Lord's pastimes. By the will of the Lord, the whole earth can at once be changed. He can do and undo a thing by his sweet will. So we never have to worry about this, that, and so many things. It means we're worried that, oh, but if it's here and there, then, you know, eternally it's there, hole in the ozone. You know, now the hole in the ozone is going back together. It's just, it does what it likes. The ocean's, the ocean and the water is going up, and then it'll go down, and getting more and more hot, and then it'll go cold again. You know, so it's just as Krishna likes it happens. So we shouldn't get distracted by that. Therefore, no one should consider himself to be self-sufficient or independent of the Lord. Right? So it's all based on the Lord. So that's the whole idea, is that self-sufficiency means one's dependent upon the Lord. And so then the Lord gives a lifestyle for humans, and then we live that and can maintain that self-sufficiency. Does that make sense? But the idea that self-sufficiency on its own is important, no, that's not. Because the point is, by the Lord's will, these things are there, and by the Lord's will, they'll be gone. So we depend upon the Lord, and following his lifestyle, that's why we do these things. Because in other words, just think of it. Before the chemicals came up, after World War I, as fertilizer, the urea, then everything on the whole planet was all organic. There wasn't anything else. So we see is that for even in recent history, you take out, less than 100 years now. You take out 90 years or something. And then it was all organic for the last, even in the Western culture, the last 3,000 years. Right? So, who decided that non-organic was better? Right? Modern man. And now when they find out they're going to kill themselves that way, then they go back and decide organic's good. And they complain about non-organic, but they're the ones that created it and supported it. And does that make sense? And the same companies that are selling organic here, where there's an awareness of that, they're still selling the inorganic in countries where they don't care. Guarantee. So the point is it's not, they only care about what they think. We're thinking, oh, it has to be organic, but Krishna is the one that made it everything organic. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. When we're following these principles, because of the modern trend, it's still non-theistic. It still won't give you devotional benefit. But we're doing this because that's how Krishna prefers it. Then of course we do it like that. Right? We're not fanatic about it, but if we have the opportunity, you do things nicely. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of what's the reason for doing these things. So we see here is that it's always being connected to the Lord. So that's, again, these pieties, these religious elements, we can't see them separate from the Lord. Or if we do, we'll get distracted. Right? Does that make sense? And if we get distracted, then we'll be on the heavenly planets, and then when the Lord comes and performs his pastimes, then we'll go, ooh, right? Like that. So we want to avoid that. Right here, get back here. Just, yes.
Sometimes people ask me, like, okay, this golden age is coming, it's here.
people are God conscious. That's the main thing. I mean, being a golden age means that it's good, right? You know, it's got the good stuff. It's whatever the best is. So the best is God consciousness. That's the golden age. Now, all these other things will also be there, but will they appreciate it? Prabhupada said, you know, all the 14 books of Vedic knowledge will be reestablished. All these things will happen. So the whole culture will be going on. And so, but that's not the main thing, because it's like Prabhupada points out, is that many want Ram Rajya, but without Ram. They want the kingdom of Ram without Ram. They want all that facility, everything going nicely, the public is very happy, leadership is very nice, but that's only there because it's connected to Ram. So the point is, the symptoms are because they're God conscious. Because they're God conscious, therefore they're following these Vedic things. When we follow the Vedic things because, oh, it's good for health, it's this, it's that, that will go away. You know what I'm saying? You know, devotees doing yoga because it's good for health, because the karmis are doing it, it's good for health. The karmis, guaranteed, if the karmis were doing no yoga at all, nothing, and even if they spoke that yoga is kind of stupid, you'd probably find a huge reduction in the amount of devotees doing yoga for health. You know what I'm saying? So it has to be that it's a tradition. You know, you want to do those things, you're inside your house, then you do that. Otherwise, you do your activities and all these things like that. But otherwise, you know, there are Vedic exercises you want to do. You know, do the Hanuman push-up. You know, a good wrestler, you know, will do, you know, 1,000 of those at a shot, or 1,500 of them a shot. You know, we think we're doing pretty good if we can do, you know, 5 or 10. But these wrestlers, these big, huge guys, you know, you see in India, I don't know, they're there so much more. They do, like Bhima and that, they do 1,500 squats and 1,500 push-ups. So generally they do them a few times. In a day they'll do 5,000. That's just their normal, you know, regime. So doing these things, yeah, and then there's a term for that. Someone's a mustan, means they're big, right? You know, they're big. They can, you know. So these guys, they're much stronger than any of these Western guys that just do weights, because they don't do as much, because they do, you know, some short things like this, but these they do, it's layered. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you have a piece of wood, you can break it, but if it's laminated, you can't break it. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, the tradition is there, but do you know anybody doing Hanuman push-ups? You know, doing the squats? It's a certain kind of squat that they do? No. But those are standard. They would just do those two. They wouldn't do anything else. Because that one does the upper part of the body, and the squat does the lower part of the body. You know, Bhima, that's all he did. And he was quite strong. He was okay. But, you know, we're not doing. You know, we'll be doing, you know, this regime with that. We'll be planking. We'll be, you know, doing all kinds of funny stuff. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the whole point, is that we're doing it not because it's connected to the Veda, but because in the modern context it's considered cool. You know what I'm saying? But as far as the universe goes, yoga has always been cool. Does that make sense? So that we have always have to consider is that this point that Dharmaraj is making, is that you always have to bring it back to Krishna. Otherwise it won't. So the golden age will have all these nice things, but it'll be there because of the Sankirtan mission. Because people in Kali Yuga aren't qualified to follow these, because you require a mode of goodness. So the only reason they'll be able to follow it is because of devotional service. Does that make sense? And so then it'll be introduced because people are Krishna conscious. But to try to get it materially, who has the piety? You know what I'm saying? Who has the piety for these things? So that's the... Yeah. Okay? Yes?
How much devotees should be concerned for these things which are suffering psychologically? Just we heard now, statistically, 150 species of life disappear daily from the planet Earth.
But what can you do about it?
But should it be spread?
No, but how do you correct things? Why are these things happening? It's because they're not Krishna conscious. So the only thing you can do is be Krishna conscious. That's why it says Krishna consciousness is the highest welfare. You want to go to the root, it's here. You know, you can say, but it's the big capitalistic corporations. But they're only making money because that's the value in society. The common person wants money. And if he could have the facility that the corporation had, he'd be doing it. But he doesn't. You know what I'm saying? So they say it's the government, it's the corporations, it's just a lack of God consciousness, that's all. So the only way to correct it is to be God conscious. Because the point is that the 8,400,000 species, those are all Krishnas. And when they're supposed to manifest, they manifest. And when they're not, they're not. Just like so many ones that I just saw an article that I think was 10 or 15 species of life that they said are extinct. And have been for, you know, they've been on the extinction list for like forever. And they just found that now there's groups of them. You know what I'm saying? So when they're supposed to be there, they'll be there. And when they're not, they're not. So we focus on making people God conscious. Then things will work more smoothly. Yes?
Do you think this distinction of some species connected with some sort of... if you think like there is Darwinism and some species were evolving?
No, not at all. Because all 8,400,000 are there. Because the evolution is not in the species, the evolution is in the consciousness. That's what the thing, the soul goes through these species from lower to higher, means they go from a lower level of consciousness up to a higher level until they get to human. And then from human, if they continue and then advance, then they go up from there. But if not, then they go back down in the animal species, and according to whatever sinful activities they performed, the matching animal species for those sins, they go through, and they'll start at the lowest and go up.
So those species disappearing and so on, maybe they're just not, they cannot keep up.
No.
Humanity,
it's not the development of humanity, it's the degradation of humanity. It's just like you have, let's say, like the Amazon forest, and so it's there, and so many things live there. But when you go in and clear the forest because you want to, you know, have cows graze there so you can send them to the slaughterhouse to maintain the meat industry, then how is that keeping up with humans? You know, they can't. You could say they can't keep down with humans. You know, they're not able to get down with the humans. Right? You know, that kind of thing. But no, it's just time by the modes of nature they go. Because generally you see what goes first are the big ones. And the big ones, you see the nature of them, they're very nice, peaceful, they're unafraid, they're anything like that. So they go first. You know, I think it first started with the dodos. They were the first to go. You know dodos?
Yes.
Yeah. They are huge birds. Because they were so big and they had no predators. They didn't know there were such things. So when some men, they just thought, oh, cool, what's this? And so because they were so nice and friendly and trusting, that's why they got killed. You know what I'm saying? So you'll see is that the higher they'll go, and then you'll be left with the more smaller, nasty ones. You know, it's like you have the big dog, and they're very peaceful. And you have that little chihuahua, he'll chew your leg off. You know? Like that, you know, that they're really, you know, the pit bull is more pleasant. You know? Of course, no one's carrying around a pit bull in their, you know, their purse or that, so that could definitely make you, you know, a bit neurotic. So, no, you ever seen someone with a pit bull in their purse? No. Yeah, so. Okay. Yeah, therefore no one should consider himself to be self-sufficient or independent of the Lord. So this idea of self-sufficiency is, oh, then we'll be complete. It's all that, and there's this idea that it's good in its own, and it's proper, and you maintain. But where does it come from? Why would you think it's good? Because of the self-sufficient, it means their independence. That's the whole idea. You live off the grid, you're independent. You understand? That would be the basis of it. Rather than just, you know, previously there was no grid. Right? Well, you go back 50 years, there was no grid. You know, you go back 100 years, there wasn't a grid. It was just normal. Everyone lived off the grid. No? There was no electricity, no internet, no any of these things. That's the grid. Right. Now the man, now he was always there, so that's a different thing. I'm trying to get away from the man. That's Diogenes. He's the first get away from the man, voila. Okay, text 25. The earthly deity in the form of a cow thus replied to the personality of religious principles in the form of a bull. O Dharma, whatever you have inquired from me shall be known to you. I shall try to reply to all those questions. Once you too were maintained by your four legs, and you increased happiness all over the universe by the mercy of the Lord. So everyone's becoming everyone by following religious principles is becoming happy, but that's happening because of the mercy of the Lord. So by the Lord's grace, one, religious principles are there, right? Krishna mentions in Gita, he gave the sacrifice, and by that, you know, all men could be happy. So by Krishna gives religion, by following it, then it will take care of your needs. You'll maintain yourself, right? So maintenance doesn't come by self-sufficient. Maintenance comes by dharma, performing your duty. Does that make sense? So whatever your duty is, that's there. So if you're a teacher, you teach. That's your duty. That's then how you'll maintain yourself. You're a farmer, then you do that. Right? But the say is, unless you're growing carrots, then you're not self-sufficient, you're not doing your duty. That has nothing to do with it. We've created that. Right? You perform your duties, then from that comes maintenance. And duties are given by the Lord. And the results of that, the ability to perform your duties is given by the Lord, and the results of, and by using those in the Lord's service, that's also by His grace. Like that. Is everybody good? Do we need to open a window or something? Or I notice everyone somehow is looking very tired. No? Okay. It's, in other words, it's above 20 degrees. So the northerners are feeling uncomfortable. The principles of religion are laid down by the Lord Himself, and the executor of such laws is Dharmaraj or Yamaraj. Such principles work fully in the age of Satyayuga. In the Treta Yuga, they are reduced by a fraction of 1/4. In the Dwapara Yuga, they are reduced to 1/2. And in the Kali Yuga, they are reduced to 1/4, gradually diminishing to the zero point. So when Kalki comes, that's when it's zero, basically. You can. And then devastation takes place. Happiness in the world depends proportionally on the maintenance of the religious principles, individually or collectively. Right? So the individuals are following it, as a group they're following. So the happiness depends on that. So the more the religious principles are done, the more we'll be happy. People say, no, but if this is there, we can never be happy. It's religious principles that will make people happy. So the religious principles already include all the things that people are looking for, right? So due to not following religious principles, people make up their own system to try to improve, you know, the condition. But then trying to improve that condition, since it's not complete, they will make mistakes, and then they will cause problems in their solution. Their solution will cause problems, right? Then they'll try to solve those problems with something else. So you're just going on constantly trying to get rid of problems like that. So it's always going on. The best part of valor is to maintain the principles despite all kinds of odds. Thus, one can be happy during the span of life and ultimately return to Godhead. Right, so yeah, the best part of valor. So the principles that are there, following the religious principles, then to follow those despite the obstacles, that's valor, the best part of valor. Otherwise, this idea is that, oh, it's difficult, no one can do it, therefore we just be practical and drop it, that's not valorous. Right. So, makes sense. Yeah. No. Oh. Oh no, we're going to one. Yeah. Yes. Sorry.
Back to the marriage situation, and I think I heard an opinion of an older devotee who just saw the situation. He said, "Oh, okay, first marriage does not work. Second marriage usually is better."
No, but you have to continue. Third time's the charm. That's the wisdom, the ancient wisdom, is third time's the charm. See, the first marriage, you have an idea what it should be. You have no idea, but you think you do. So that one bombs badly, right? Then the second marriage, you can still consider continuing with that mentality, though it's a little weakened, but you still are determined that it'll work that way. Then you see that one doesn't work either. Then you figure out that one, you're getting too old and your whole ideas didn't work. So now you become submissive and actually deal with the partner properly. And now the third one works. Right? It's called the school of hard knocks. Like that. But otherwise, the Vedic idea is that if you're trained, the first one works. Right? So the training comes before marriage. That's the idea. So it's not that somebody's thinking they're going to get married, so then, some few weeks or months before they get married, you have a little, whatever it is, 2-day, 5-day, or 10-day kind of seminar, and then that will make it all work. You have to be being trained since you're small. Then it works. Is that something? Yeah. No, it's not if she divorces. She doesn't make her the enemy. It's when she remarries. Divorcing is not. I mean, see, in the Vedic system that you would have separation. Separation is mentioned. It just means that somehow or another it doesn't work. So then the girl generally goes back and lives with her father. Right? Because then he'll take care and everything. And the kids are there and they're with the grandparents. And so for the kids it'll be comfortable. Like that. It's when she remarries. Because then the whole point is that this new person is important to the mom, but not to them. Right? In other words, the person's marrying their mom because of the mom. They're not marrying because of them. So they don't have that relationship with them, that depth and all that. And that's so because of that, then that's where it is. So the mom cares more about herself than them. So it's always that the mom puts that about them. Because it's in the background that the mother and father are married, that they're together, that's automatic. But now when she goes through this whole thing and gets married, then it brings to the forefront that it's her scene, not their scene. Because who she marries, it's about her, not them. You know, it means you try your best, that the person likes, and this and that, and so many things like that. But it's really not going to work. The son might catch it a bit, but the girl will never. You know what I'm saying? Because it's just because the daughter takes on the nature of the father. Does that make sense? But sometimes you see if they have never seen the dad died young or left young or stuff like that, so they never seen, or so young that they don't see, before they have 2, 3, like this. Then sometimes they see everybody else has a dad, and, then they tell their mom, why don't you go out and get a dad? We want a dad here, It's just, pick them up at Walmart or, Tesco's or, nowadays I guess you'd order online, stuff like that. And, just make sure you get the what do you call it, return policy, just in case, you don't like, so you can. That's rare, but I've only seen that when the kid was really small and it was a boy. Like that. But otherwise, that's just the mentality. That's how it works. Because what we said is that the relationship with the parents, that's as long as you're alive. But the relationship between husband and wife, depending on who you are, let's say like Elizabeth Taylor, you might go through, eight of them. Like that. Does that make sense? To be fair, one of them was twice. But what I'm saying? So one has to consider these things, but it's not by getting divorced she becomes the enemy. They may not appreciate it, because the point is why can't they? Because it's the mood that's there. You know, I mean, saying point is lack of training, it makes it very difficult. But basically it comes down, it's the mood, if there's just that proper attitude of the couple trying to, you know, support each other and being aware of the other person, you should be able to make it work. So, you know, when you say irreconcilable differences, that means that you have your idea, they have theirs. But why did they get married? Because there was something common. But now they're not looking at the common, they're only looking at the difference. You know, so they switched how they view. So why do that? Because there's the idea you can get something better, something more. I wanted this, I'm not getting this. But it's the material world, you never get what you want. You know what I'm saying? Why the third marriage works, it's not because they happen in succession. You know, and by the time you're 24, you marry for the third time. It's because when they're 50, they're getting married for the third time. And by that time, you're too old and tired and all that, so you just kind of surrender. You know what I'm saying? And so it works. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole point. So it's just that by that method it worked. It's not any glory to them. You know, it just, it's going to work. You know, it's just like a, yeah, that's, I think, we'll leave the rest of it up to the imagination. Is that okay? Is that something else? That one? No? Good. Okay. This one can be happy during the span of life and ultimately return back to Godhead, right? So the idea is to go back to Godhead. And in doing that, then one, you know, creates a situation that you can be, you know, is happy. That means you perform religious duties, then the facilities are there, you're basically happy. That makes sense? So basically happy. Ecstatic, that's not going to happen. That in the spiritual world, they have that. It's called bhava, right? But here, you know, happy, you know. It's like, you know, oh, how are you today? Yeah, okay. That's as good as it's going to get. Be aware of that. And if you're satisfied with that, then it works. But otherwise, if you want more than that, then you got a problem. Means, are you talking about spiritual or material? Yeah, spiritual is, no, the point is you advance in Krishna consciousness. So at a particular point in Shraddha Prema, then just before Prema you have bhava. Bhava is known as ecstasy. Below that, then you'll be tasting, you know, something of bliss, but it's not continuous. Why bhava is called bhava is that ecstasy is continuous. But below that point, you taste it. You know, even from just the very beginning stage, the kirtan, something you've tasted, but it's not consistent because you'll get distracted by other things. So it's just a matter of moving forward. That's all. So the point is if at the time of leaving the body you remember Krishna, you'll go to Krishna. And if you don't, then depending on if you're very nicely situated in devotion, if you're steady in devotional service, then generally you'll take birth in the family of devotees. You're not so stable, then you'll go to the heavenly planets. That's generally. And if you remember Krishna, no matter how advanced you are, it doesn't matter, you'll go to Krishna. And then you'll progress from there. But its progression is very easy because you're not conditioned. For us, it progresses slow because of conditioning. But if you take birth in the spiritual platform, there is no conditioning. So then you move forward very fast. Does that make sense? So in any case, it's going to be good. Like that. But, you know, remembering Krishna is better. You can, but generally it's just like this. If you're having materially a good time, how much are you thinking about Krishna? So if you're having materially good time that's a bit better than here, then there's even less chance you'll think of Krishna. So, but they have their regular things that happen, so therefore then they remember. Does that make sense? You know, it's like Indra will be Indra for 71 cycles of the Mahayugas, right? So that means there's so many incarnations of the Lord, so at those points he'll be remembering. But otherwise, being Indra and sitting in his court and watching Urvasi dance, there's a good chance he's not remembering Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. So therefore it's the least ideal. And then from there you'll come back and then take birth in, you know, religious families, wealthy families, those kind of, you know, families. But the point is they have the opportunity in the way they have the time to be Krishna conscious. But whether they'll take advantage of it, so that's another thing. Well, if you're born in a family of devotees, generally that means then you're exposed to Krishna consciousness. Then whether you take it up, that's up to you. You're an individual. Like that. But if you go back to Godhead, then that's you're there. Now you just have to develop from wherever you are to prema. Does that make sense? Yeah, so no problem.
What is the most essential kind of focus in order to use the desire for
that? Be dependent on Krishna. Make Krishna the center. That's what we're saying all along, is all these things that you always see it connected to Krishna. Then Krishna is the important element. But otherwise, if we think other things are important, then at the time of death we'll think of those. You know, if we had just been able to, you know, finish that rerouting that stream that's coming down from the mountain, because we were having discussions with the neighbor because he had one and we didn't, and then we finally got it through and he agreed, but we didn't quite dig it yet. Then the water comes through, then we can run the wheel thing, so that will then do this and it'll do that, and then we can be self-sufficient and all that. Then you won't go back to Godhead. Like that, you know, you'll take birth someplace that has the wheel mill. You know, good chance you'll be in the family of that, and it's their business to take care of it, right? You know, so you'll be grinding wheat all day, and you're thinking, what am I doing here? You know. That's it. It's just a matter of, we understand that whatever it is, it's an opportunity by Krishna. And we are dependent on Krishna for how it unfolds, how it develops, you know, what results we get and all that. Because it's up to Krishna, because he knows what's best for us. You know, it's like the doctor. You know, we have a problem, then, you know, let's say you have a cut or something like that. Then for us, you want to go to the doctor because, you know, he takes care of these things. But the perfection would be he'll just kiss it and make it better and put on a nice colored Band-Aid and Harivol, right? But he might not. He'll do things that are painful, but it works. So sometimes Krishna arranges things that they're going nicely for us. Sometimes they're not nicely for us, because it's the medicine required. And if we just are dependent upon him, then we'll see. We'll go through, we'll be purified, and then we will see the benefit. You know, that, because the benefit is advancing in Krishna consciousness. And then we find all the other things go very easily. Okay. So end here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jayanatai Gaur Premanandi.